RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Wednesday morning means Legal Hub here at RCR, one of the most popular slots, segments on this program, which is great. And I want to welcome to our Legal Hub for this week, lawyer and campaigner, Kirsten Murford. Hi, Kirsten. Great to have you back on our show. I think it's the first time I've spoken to you since we went, as I say, through the hedge backwards, went off air, wondered if we were going to ever be here, came back roaring back like a rocket on rails, and here we are. So it's good to be able to chat to you again. Thanks for coming on.
Great. Thanks for having me on, and like congratulations for raising all the funds.
Yeah, wow. Okay, it can be done. Okay. All right, we're here to talk about the WHO Pandemic Treaty and IHRs. So latest development. So over the weekend, I think it was Sunday night, there was no vote in the Pandemic Treaty. Right?
They haven't reached agreement, no.
Yeah. Okay. Was that a surprise to you?
No, we'd always sort of thought that maybe that was the Trojan horse for the IHRs. And it started as quite a simple document, and it was all about transparency, and they actually were being transparent, unlike the international health regulations, the working group and the international health regulations. So we just had a funny feeling this could happen. Also, it grew from, I think, 22 pages to over 104 pages. So that's why they couldn't reach agreement.
Okay. Is that a relief? Do we take that as a relief?
I think in some respects, I mean, some, even with the international health regulations, there are some improvements, but there are some very concerning aspects as well. The one thing I like about the pandemic treaty not being agreed to and taking our time is it doesn't bring in that one health as such and the climate change.
Right. Okay.
Where I can't see it expressly in the international health regulations at this point in time. It doesn't mean it couldn't creep in.
Okay. Well, let's talk about IHRs then, shall we? Pretty well. So top of my list to ask you about, proactive release of docs, re the negotiating mandate for IHR and pandemic treaty. I've gone and had a look. There's a lot there, but there's some redactions in there as well. So do you want to break down what you saw in those documents?
Yeah, so the most, I guess the word concerning is that I actually asked under the OIA at the start of the year, prior to the submissions closing, if I could have the latest copy of the IHRs. And as you will recall, they came back and said, no, you cannot have the latest copy of the IHRs. You could just use the public document from 2022, which I thought was very on my nose, because like they're asking people for public consultation and not giving us the actual document, where, as you can see from this negotiating mandate, they knew that the IHRs had actually changed.
Right.
Yeah. So there's actually a paragraph in there saying, with all the submissions, people were very concerned about sovereignty and our concerns. A lot of those concerns had actually come out. So it was almost, I felt like they were almost setting us up to look like conspiracy theorists. Because now they can go, look, here's the document.
Okay.
But we had to work from the old document from 2022.
So what would the reason be for supplying old documents if you had, you know, fully transparent, nothing to hide?
I cannot understand that in a democracy.
No.
No. Why would you ask for public permissions?
Unorthodox in your
farcical.
Mind.
Absolutely farcical.
Oh, farcical. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It's even worse than that.
Yeah.
So, because it feels like there might be stuff to hide, you know, that's what you automatically jump to. What are they hiding? What's going on?
I don't know. I don't understand the lack of transparency. I've tried a number of times to find out which delegate is actually going to the World Health Assembly this weekend, what started today. I can't find it. And I'm usually pretty good at research, but that's how I stumbled upon, it's been a long day.
Yeah, it's all right.
The latest edition of the International Health Regulations from Tedros dated the 27th of May last night, because I was looking at all the delegates' information.
Well, that's fresh.
Yeah, very fresh.
Yeah, yeah.
I've even learned how you can catch the shuttle over Geneva.
Okay, and what do they say? How different are they? What changes, what amendments have?
To be fair, there are some improvements. For example, the standing recommendations and temporary recommendations, as we were all concerned, they were going to be binding, that had been changed. And that is one point I raised in my submissions, But in the latest draft, and I'm sure this is the draft that Cabinet had to look at, it has now gone back to non-binding. So they've actually taken a lot of those human rights concerns that we had, that were valid human rights concerns, and that's been all pulled back, which is good. But then I'm also very concerned, as I was saying before, they've now introduced a national IHR authority that is different from the existing national IHR focal point. The focal point is for communication between WHO in New Zealand and other countries, but this new authority is to coordinate the implementation of the regulations. It actually says the parties should take measures to implement paragraphs which are all about the national health authority, as appropriate, adjusting the domestic legislation and or administration arrangements.
Adjusting?
Yeah. I don't know what that means yet.
Yeah.
But I know what the word means. Yeah, I know what the word means too. Yeah. I mean, there has been a lot on social media about sovereignty. And as I've always said, who can dictate directly to New Zealand? It actually had to be implemented through our laws, but that was our choice. But now we've got this special authority, if we sign up, that's actually going to be implementing and no doubt having a relationship directly with WHO, making sure that we're actually implementing.
So a middle, like a middleman, so there's no direct WHO sort of point. It kind of filters through another organisation.
Yeah, and I think it's just another step. It was just, and we've discussed this before in a show, Article number 18 brought in all the steps that we had during the mandates, the lockdowns, vaccine passports, etc. That's always been there. It's still there.
Okay.
And so we can always say WHO never said to do that, but our government chose to follow what was in the regulations. So now I think it's going to be another tier that we've now got this authority. So you know how when you need to do an OIA, we went to court, they'd always refer back and say, no, it's the government. You've got to follow the government's mandate. This is the science. And I think this is just, yeah, now it's the national IHR authority.
Okay. So we've had a change of government. Do you think that's meaning much? I mean, good, fair question, right? I mean,
that is a very fair question. I was enthusiastic at the start. There is some good stuff being done, but I am very concerned that they now want to withdraw the rejection of Article 59.
What's Article 59?
So back in 2022, when they first met, they decided to do a whole lot of amendments to the international health regulations, which they said had been passed. Although we know that a couple of European politicians have written to WHO and said, can you show us where you voted? Because under the constitution, you're meant to vote. That's been cricket. So I would suspect that it was never voted on. So that could actually potentially make it void. But the main amendment was in terms of implementation and rejecting or reserving amendments. So it's reducing the timeframe. So we used to have 18 months to reject a reserve, and the people that didn't opt out, sorry, the states that didn't opt out on the 1st of December now only have 10 months. In terms of implementation, we used to have 24, and those people that didn't opt out on the 1st of December now have 12 months, and that comes into effect in May. So in terms of the overall timeframe, under the old regime, we had 42 months. Under the new regime, we've got 22 months, which is quite a cut.
Do we know the reason for that? Because that sounds to me like you're just trying to speed up a process and race people towards something rather than let them sort of diligently walk slowly and consider.
I would agree with you on that. We know that natural occurring pandemics are not a
very common.
We haven't even had a proper COVID inquiry at the moment. We haven't learned any lessons yet about what we got right, what we got wrong. And the way that I read a lot of this IHR and the pandemic treaty is that all these premises are based on, I'll say flaw, although the word fraud does come to mind sometimes in terms of the responses are about the PCR test, vaccination rather than other medications.
Yeah, here we go.
So it's all the big pharma solutions rather than looking at what we could actually do without harming people.
Yeah, James Rogowski's been on this program quite a few times, and every time he comes on, he hammers it. This is just a business plan. It's a business model for pharma. That's how he sees it. Is that how you see it?
Yep, and it's clear in the mandate as well that they actually talk about that, about the poorer nations having capacity building and also the technology transfer. So at first it's sort of like, oh, they missed out on the vaccine, so they need that. But James actually talks about the African Omicron example where they put the pathogen over and then all the big pharma came along and took advantage of it and used it to commercialize and made billions and billions of dollars. So I think he raises a very good point that these poorer countries are going, well, we want a piece of the money.
Yeah. And also there's the all that about creating labs and going on endless searches why you'd want to do that for
Well, the pathogens. Thing is, if you can find a novel pathogen,
it's a supply line.
You've got a supply line.
Yeah, it's so clear, isn't it?
And within the mandate, they talk about the World Trade Organization and all those things and intellectual property. What has that got to do with health? I mean, yes, I understand that it has to do with health in terms of the vaccine, but not everyone wants a vaccine. And this vaccine that we've had for COVID is a complete, it's a failed product.
Well, I'm seeing people sick everywhere. And that means it doesn't work, all right?
No, but it should work because the government documentation says it works.
Oh, sorry.
That's where I'm really concerned about the national authority as well, because we're going to come circular again where we've got the one source of truth, and this time it's going to be this national IHR authority.
Do you think there's a hardcore somewhere, I don't know where, here, and health administration policy wonks, I don't know, who are actually on board with this and are going to find ways to wiggle around, shimmy around edges.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And who are they? Who are they?
Well, they've got to be the bureaucrats and they've got to be working for MFAT or Ministry of Health because these are where the documents are coming from. It was Ministry of Health that denied me the ability to have their latest copy. But just reflect back on how we were treated during the mandates. I am happy to say there was a clear breach of the human rights. There was a clear breach of the Bill of Rights. I know the court said differently, and that's where I sort of took a bit of caution before I said that because being a lawyer and my practicing certificate.
Yeah.
But paragraph 36 of this document says, if we go ahead with this and sign up, and all the indications in here are making it sound so positive and that we need to do it, there are no expected inconsistencies with the Human Rights Act 1993 or the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act 1990.
How can they say that? Look what's happened.
Exactly. When we've still got Article 18 in the International Health Regulations and we're strengthening. So I'm dumbfounded.
I noticed in the document that I mentioned at the start, I'll just bring it up here so I can get the right title, the Cabinet Social Outcomes Committee, and I'm spooling through pages, but I noticed there was one para where I think the negotiator or the representative for New Zealand was whited out, the name.
Yes, that's why I've been trying to find
them. I would want to know who the hell is representing me. And if you're going to white it out, I want to know why. Is there some, because they give a list of why things are redacted.
Is there conflict
of interest. Yes. But we can't have any conflicted people in this role, can we? Huh?
We shouldn't have. Whether we do, I'm getting suspicious. Last night when I was researching, I managed to find who they were sending from Australia. I could find out how much it was going to cost for their airfares, how much it was going to cost for their accommodation.
Oh, interesting.
And it is normal protocol, if at least a minister goes, that there has to be a travel request and it itemises everything. Why can't I find anything anywhere about who is representing New Zealand?
Why would we be special in that regard then?
I have no idea.
Because we know
something sinister.
We know there's another New Zealander involved in this.
You might want to say it so I don't get in trouble.
Well, I think we know who we're talking about. A mild-mannered person who looked looks like Radar out of out of MASH.
Yeah.
That kind of, you know, we're going to think these things.
Well, they talk about transparency throughout, and one of the reasons they want to sign up is for transparency. So why is there no transparency at this end? And do you think if we just sign up, suddenly there's going to be transparency?
No.
No.
Not based on what we've been through.
No, exactly.
I mean, they're still doing it with fluoride. You know, feed the kid fluoride, you know, no problem. Doesn't violate any rights.
Exactly. And it's the science.
Yeah, and so when you start to see everything flipped in multiples lined up in a row, there's something very off about that too. I mean, I'm just a dumb guy on the street, don't know anything really about the science, but I do, when things don't add up, you know, I notice.
And how we just keep coming back to Big Pharma solutions and their products, and we know that the WHO has a vested financial interest, and that they have those NGOs, et cetera, Gavi, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, World Bank. Everyone's pushing. And as James says, it's a new gold rush. And I'm actually, at first I sort of wondered about that, but the more I've looked into it, it would appear so.
And we could think that a motivation is money, follow the money. So if we don't know if there are conflicts of interest because we don't know who the people are, one of the other assumptions is it could be that there's some monetary incentive in there that is too good. You've got to protect it.
Yes, and I mean, the example is the poorer nations and why they're wanting to get in the game. Why does New Zealand want to get in the game? That's a question. I don't know the answer to it.
And who's hanging off it here?
Exactly.
The teat, potentially, I'm thinking.
So why we keep on saying transparency, there is no transparency, so we don't know the answers to those questions, and they're very valid questions. And that's why we need the COVID inquiry, an independent COVID inquiry, to actually expose some of this. We may have done things good in some places, but...
What?
I see a lot of issues.
Okay, I'm thinking...
I guess I'm trying to be diplomatic and balanced, but it's actually getting harder and harder to be balanced. And I'm actually starting to get quite angry.
It's like you're playing a game. It's like charades or something.
And I'm starting to get really sick of the politicians all across the board. And
I was going to ask you about that. A lot of our listeners were very relieved. Well, were relieved as you could be at, you know, the inclusion, I think it's fair to say, of NZ First in that coalition. Mm-hmm. And I like to think that we had a bit of persuasive power to make people realize that a fragmented vote wasn't going to work and go a particular way. Well, that ended up as it has. You were connected to that. You were a candidate for that party.
Yes.
You're kind of connected. I mean, okay, inside baseball, probably not too much, but what's your sense of, okay, the understanding of those New Zealand First MPs, particularly the senior ones in Parliament? How across everything do you think they are? And, you know, can we rely on them to do the right thing?
I hope so. I know they're very, very overloaded and busy, but in my head, that shouldn't be an excuse. If you're going to become a minister or a deputy minister, et cetera, maybe balance your workload. Why do some people have lots of ministers and others won't? So I'm just trying to be
diplomatic. You got to prioritize too. What's important?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's great that the Therapeutic Products Act, is being repealed, but I see the COVID inquiry and this as being very, very important, because the international health regulations are our future. The COVID inquiry is about our past injustice. It's also about learning. And I would have, if I was doing it, I would have done that first before we even consider signing up to this document.
Yeah, good point. Good point.
And I would also, no way in hell, withdraw Article 59, because that gives us less time as a nation to consider it. So are we actually going to get the COVID inquiry
in that time span
to implement?
Yeah.
And it's looking, every day goes by and it's looking less and less likely.
Have you heard anything about how the inquiry is coming together that gives you any sort of sense?
Pretty much closed ranks. And I understand partially that, as a lawyer, that you have to keep a tight ship, especially with the media. And
well, they didn't even have a judge in this, in the inquiry, did they? They had two commissioners.
Yeah, one, both we know,
screwed it up in Australia, and was it, was the Baker / Bloomfield of Australia, and the other is a Treasury wonk.
Yeah, and also ex-World Bank.
Oh, I forgot that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what does that have to do? That's got a lot to do with business models and currency and international finance, right?
Exactly. So I'm becoming more and more concerned. I don't know what the answer is. I hope everyone's doing the right thing. And I'm just like you now. I hear what I hear via the New Zealand First newsletters, etc. I don't have any special...
Yeah. And it seems to me that still most New Zealanders, if they're mainstream media consumers, have no idea about
any
of this.
Exactly. That's why I'm so concerned, because I see these international health regulations and the potential for them as being very draconian. But actually defined it as a pandemic emergency, which is inclusive. It's included within the public emergency of international concern. My question also is like, so we had public health emergencies of international concern, and that was fine. Hmm. So why have they done a new pandemic emergency within that? So it's a subset.
Oh, okay. Why would you do that?
So I'm just finding that interesting as well.
So an emergency within an emergency?
Yeah.
Okay.
But once again, all the definitions are a little bit, I mean, this does actually say what it's meant to do. But it's, equitable, all those sort of words that can kind of go both ways. And we know what we consider those words to mean.
Yeah.
But also the average Joe on the street will be like, well, that's great. We're going
that
to give
sounds
vaccines.
Fair enough. That
We're going to give vaccines
enough.
To the poorer countries.
Yeah.
But they don't understand. I mean, everyone understands that the vaccine doesn't work. I think that's pretty clear cut.
Yeah.
But they do not understand necessarily that it can cause the level of harm that it has caused.
Well, it's time to find out.
Yeah. And do we want a vaccine every time?
No.
That someone finds a pathogen so that they can
commercialize when you're going on a hunt for pathogens.
Yeah.
Everywhere you can look, under every rock.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, James was saying as well, over in Africa, there was a cholera outbreak. And so instead of sending, I mean, cholera is like when you get really, really bad diarrhea, right? Yeah, so most people know that they have it straight away because you're very sick.
Pretty obvious. Yeah.
They sent 1.4 million tests. So you're going to, it just seems illogical to me.
Yeah, because you already
there might
know.
Be more to it.
Yeah, but you can create lots of tests. You sell them, right?
Yeah. And so he sort of explained that gets, 1.4 million tests out of their stockpile. Then they've got a contract that needs to be refilled.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm starting to think along the same lines.
If it's like the American Defense Department, it's like $9,000 for a bolt,
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But we've got bird flu now. Coincidence? Interesting timing? Am
very,
I reading too much into
timing.
Anything?
I hope it's not, but it seems to be revving up. The media is doing all the scaring and fear-mongering. So I guess we've just got to watch this space.
Yeah. Boy.
I've also got a crystal ball, unfortunately.
Out with the popcorn.
Yeah. But I just feel we're heading in the wrong direction. I was so excited when we, on the 1st of December, it was actually the 30th of November, but the 1st of December was the deadline.
Yep.
Reserve, which ended up having to be a rejection. of Section 59, because it felt like we had some hope that we were going to discuss it as a nation. It was going to be transparent. You know, there was going to be people talking about it.
Not quite yet.
But that's not happening. And so if they're going to covertly take that away as well, because how many people go searching parliament records to find these mandates?
No like one. They know that. They know that. And I wonder just too, also, Winston, I mean, he's the foreign minister as well. Yes. So isn't that a conflict potentially?
Well, the mandate is signed off by both Winston and Shane Rickey because they're the two ministers looking after this. So I'm just hoping Winston does the right thing.
Because isn't there that collective responsibility cabinet thing that you got to do stuff that you don't really like because the rest of them want to do it?
Yeah, and also Winston, if he's playing a long game, which I'm trying to hold on to that, he could just be setting it up.
Right.
But if I take the cynical view, then I'm very disappointed. So I will hold on to his experience. He is a very good foreign minister.
Yeah.
He knows how it all works. So he's got some tricks up his sleeve. We are a democratic party, so I just have to hold on to that belief that I don't know stuff because I'm not in the inner circle.
Yeah, no, that's
and
fair
that
enough.
Doesn't mean just because I don't know something that there isn't a proper strategy and plan in place.
If we had more information, it would be easier.
Exactly. If they could have just give us the basic document, unredacted mandate, even telling us who was attending.
Yeah, be nice to know, wouldn't it?
Basic stuff, right?
I wonder who that person is. Given that you can go and search out all the Aussie details.
Yeah.
And get the airfares and everything.
Yeah.
Okay, is there anything more to say before we wind up our Legal Hub chat today? Any other points that you want to get across that I might have not asked the right question on?
No, I just think we're letting an organisation that has financial conflicts of interest, no integrity, doesn't follow its own rules. Why should we be following them? I mean, if they're not following their own rules at this point in time when they haven't even got it signed up, what's going to happen next? Like, process is really, really important. Process is important in corporations. And if anyone in a company didn't follow the Companies Act, they could be in serious trouble.
Yeah.
So why are we allowing a big pharma-funded organization not follow their own rules and constitution? So if we do sign up to this over the weekend, and I hope we don't, I'm going to instigate a referendum.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know how.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just don't ask how, you just do. Yeah.
Well, I think I can hear, well, I can't actually hear, but I think I can sense our audience saying, yeah.
Yeah.
If it's needed.
That as well, because I'm exhausted. As you can tell today, like I'm tripping over my words because I'm so tired.
Well, I didn't really notice, actually. But thank you for coming on, and because that adds a bit more clarity to where things, because there's so much detail with this. It's such a moving thing. It's hard to understand where it's at any particular time, you know.
And that's exactly what makes me suspicious.
Yeah.
James had a great analogy about the dog barking up the tree, and the dog's barking up the tree going, don't take our sovereignty, but this girl's already jumped a couple of trees over.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's already happened.
And I do feel that it's happening here.
Mm. All right, Kirsten Murfitt, thanks for coming on our Legal Hub, Kirsten. Get some rest. I know it's easy to say that, but, you know, and thank you for what you do.
Great. Thank you for what you do as well, and thank you to RCR.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.